You're listening to KSCO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me.
My guest is Academy Award-winning actor George Chakiris. He has appeared in dozens of films and television shows, as well as the stage. He portrayed Bernardo, leader of the Sharks, in the 1962 Best Picture Oscar winner, West Side Story. George Chakiris has written a memoir, and it's a lot of fun, and it's called My West Side Story, a Memoir. And I am thrilled to be able to say, George Chakiris, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. I'm so glad to be here with you. Thank you.
The book was a lot of fun to read, and I think the place where I'd love to start with you, since you've done this thing that hardly anyone has done, which is, you know, relatively few have done, which is win an Academy Award. Can you take us to that night? I mean, the nominees, did you think you would win?
Oh, God, nothing like that ever even crossed my mind. I just knew that it was a great night. Rita and I attended together. The car came and got me first, and then we went to Rita and got her. And she said, I'm practicing my loser's face. and so... The thing that I feel most when I think about that night is what a wonderful time both of us had, because we both, as you know, got lucky. We attended together. We were great friends there then. We're still great friends. And just to have spent that evening together, both of us sharing that evening together, it was just an incredible time altogether. But I never thought about smart enough, I guess, to realize, think about competition and who else was nominated. Of course, I thought about it. And in recent years, when I think about it, that my God, what a night that was, you know?
It was Montgomery Clift.
Yeah.
Peter Falk.
Yeah.
Jackie Gleason and George C. Scott.
I mean, what a, I mean, what an, ex- and actors that I loved then and I've always loved. I mean, it's, yeah, it was quite an experience.
And you must have seen those pictures and admired those actors. I mean, those are some of my favorite movies. Gleason had never done such a dramatic role as he does in those.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Peter Falk, what a great actor he is.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I'm right when I say, I think we share the same birthday, September 16th, I think is his birthday too, oh. I think.
Yeah, so that must have been just a thrilling night. And then you guys just went off and partied all night.
Well, not all night, but yeah, the governor's ball, it was a fantastic evening. I mean, because we couldn't have been happier if we tried, you know. It was, again, just the fact that we had, Rita and I attended together, and we were both fortunate. Just, it was just an extraordinary evening altogether.
You know, I think a lot of people, myself included, had not really known you before West Story. Although now, when I look at some of my favorite movies, I see
I'm in the back somewhere.
in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, I mean, You're right there when Marilyn is singing Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one of my favorite credits, it sounds corny, but I know you'll understand it. One of my favorite credits is being able to say, I was one of the guys behind Marilyn Monroe and in the Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend number from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. I mean, how many of us can say that, you know? And by the way, it was... I loved working on that movie so much. The choreographer was Jack Cole, Marilyn's favorite choreographer, always. So all the dancers in town really loved working for Jack Cole to begin with. So it was an amazing time. And historically, you know, because of her, the beat keeps going on.
Well, now that's such a strange set where that number is going on, and there's people don't even realize it, but there's these girls that are holding and they're just perfectly still. That must have been a painful experience for those dancers to stand there so perfectly still.
Well, I'll tell you, no, those girls were sort of part of the chandelier or something.
Yeah.
Thinking back to to filming it, I don't think I ever noticed them up there because we were so concentrated on what we had to do. But yeah, those girls had to be really patient.
And what about Marilyn? Was she a patient rehearser?
Absolutely, absolutely. She was in, I think she basically probably did most of her rehearsal by herself with a dance assistant to learn what she had to learn. So much smarter than having to learn with everybody else staring at her, you know? Right. So, but she did come to rehearsal a few times, very quiet and very concentrated, and never drew attention to herself ever. And filming also, she was very quiet. Never bothered, I shouldn't say never, she didn't speak to anyone, only because she was concentrated on the work. And what I remember about her from that is whenever they called cut for any reason, she didn't look in the mirror, she didn't go back to her dressing room, she went right back to the starting position to start again. Ooh. Very quiet and just very, very concentrated on the work. That's what she was doing in that whole time.
Now, in musicals, In great musicals, yeah, oftentimes there are no cuts during a musical number because they don't want you to think that they're not doing the entire dance. And so they try not to cut during a song. What is that like when you're filming a musical like that?
Well, I'll tell you, in fact, there were cuts. There were sections that were of a musical number photo, and it was staged with that in mind, that the camera would be at a certain angle for that particular section of the musical number, and then for another camera angle for another section. So it was never from beginning to end at all. It was in sections, planned sections, keeping the editing in mind.
Yeah. And you worked with so many, I mean, you're a fabulous dancer. How did you become a dancer? Was that your entry into show business, dancing?
It was the first thing I studied was dance. When I was a kid, like so many kids, I knew movies, and I especially love movie musicals. And I have a sister, she's a little bit older than me, my sister Catherine. She and I were the two in the family who really always loved dancing. It was very natural to both of us, and we used to dance with each other in the living room, of course. When I was in school, in high school, in Long Beach, we were living in Long Beach at that time, there was a girl in school, Joan Scanlon, who was a dancer, beautiful dancer, and she's the one who brought to my attention a school in Hollywood, the American School of Dance. She told me that Leslie Caron and Sid Charisse take class there. Well, that's all I had to hear. Uh-huh. So I took the train from Long Beach to Hollywood one morning to watch a professional class, 11:30 at that school. Nobody famous in class, but I knew that I had to study there if I could. And so I got a job as an office boy in the May Company downtown Los Angeles, working during the day and start taking class at night. And now I was 19. So I was coming to studying dance a little bit late in the game, but I didn't know that. And that's just, it was just a lucky circumstance, I'll say, because it was a great school. It was one of those schools, whenever the ballet companies were in town, they always went to the American School to take class. So it was a serious, really beautifully run school of dance, all kinds of dance.
And they never said, oh, you know, don't, you can't do this, you're too old.
Never occurred to me. Never thought of it. You know, never thought. But I mean, we know now, at least I know now, that I think what the ballet companies do now, when they are looking for dancers to be a serious dancer in a ballet company, they pick them pretty young. And I think they try to pick them as much as they can, looking at their bodies and thinking, is that body going to be able to do this stuff? And obviously, a natural body, what your body naturally has, if it can help you in the dance world, of course, that's an asset. But anyway, for me, none of that ever crossed my mind because I didn't know about it. And, you know, ignorance is bliss. I mean, it really is true because you just move forward with that young energy. It's nothing gets in your way.
today, do you, does your body feel like an athlete at the end? I mean, has it been a difficult thing for your body that you spent your life dancing?
No, you know, touch wood, so far, I've never had an injury of any kind ever in all of this time. But as with time, you can't do what you used to, I can't do what I did when I was 19 or 20 or 25. I don't even try. I don't even think about it. But dancing is a really, really, really demanding art and profession. And dancers are wonderfully disciplined people. And they always have a great sense of humor as well, I think, because what they're doing is not easy. And just by instinct, humor helps in the process, you know.
When you were a kid watching the movies and watching mm-hmm. the musicals, were you more drawn to Fred Astaire or Gene Kelly?
Well, you know, when I watched them both, but in watching them, you know, because they presented their partners so beautifully. Fred Astaire showed Ginger. I mean, so the focus was more on the women to me when I think back. Mm-hmm. You know, the skirts swirling and they were visually kind of more interesting in a way. So mm-hmm. I noticed the partners, the female partners, more than I noticed them. But hey, with time, I sure noticed them. And now when I watch either of them, I pay serious attention and really am marvel at it. I mean, they were both so extraordinary and just, you know, they're icons with good reason.
The styles of Astaire and Kelly are very different. And I think the kind of dancing that you did and the kind of dancing that we think of in West Side Story is more of an athletic kind of Gene Kelly dancing, which is one of the reasons that I asked you that.
Yeah.
And then eventually you worked with Gene Kelly.
I did. I worked in the chorus of Brigadoon. I was one of the dancers in that. And then in 1967, I think it was, Gene and I were in a movie, a French movie musical called The Young Girls of Rochefort.
Love that movie.
That's such a lovely movie. Jacques Demy, who was the writer and the director, and with the score by Michel Legrand, he was such a gifted, really talented man. He had done the Umbrellas of Cherbourg, which got really worldwide attention, properly so. And it was a wonderful experience altogether for different reasons. First of all, Catherine Deneuve and her sister Françoise Dauriac, they played twins. And those two girls were such great sisters. They were really so good with each other. They had a sense of humor, and there was never a sense of competition as there could be, never. So that's one of the things that I remember, how much I liked both of them. Gene and I didn't get to do anything together in that film because the storyline didn't permit it. But I got to be around him in a different way from working in the course of Brigadoon. And one of the things that I remember from that particular experience was his wife, Jeannie Coyne, sent me a letter, and with a can of corned beef hash, his birthday was coming up, and she was asking me if I could prepare his favorite breakfast, which was scrambled eggs and corned beef hash and coffee and so, and as a surprise for him. And she gave me a little note to a card to go with it as well. So we all got together with the chef at this place where we were staying to organize this breakfast for Jean. You know, with a single rose on it and a little note from his wife. And for a moment, he thought she was there. He was so surprised. I remember those kinds of things from I remember much more too, just working on that movie. But Gene was such a lovely guy, and again, you know, he and Fred Astaire were really pioneers, and I don't think anyone has ever gone past what they did originally in movie musicals, camera work, all kinds of things that they did so expertly, and I guess people have tried to emulate correctly so as well.
Well, you know, your book, My West Side Story, a memoir, George Chakiris, it's so vivid. And I wonder, did you keep journals while you're working?
No. Well, I used to keep an appointment book just so I'd remember what I had to do. And in doing the book, because, boy, there was gaps where I couldn't remember anything. So I went back to, I found a lot of my appointment books, and I was able to remember things by using that reference. But that's one of the things that was so interesting about the book, because it's a long time. And there were places where there was a movie that I made in Spain called Sharon in Red, I think it was called. I have no recollection of having done it. I did it because I know it's there, but my point is there was a lot that I really had to fight to try and recall.
Well, you did a great job. It seems like it flowed very easily. So once you kind of opened your memories, they all kind of poured in?
Well, I'll tell you what, one of the nice things about doing the book is because I was able to revisit, so to speak, a lot of that stuff. I've had such a great time. I've met and worked and become friendly with so many wonderful people across, over the years. And I just kind of marvel at how lucky I've been now and again along the way,
I'm Gary Shapiro. You're listening to From the Bookshelf on KSCO, and we're talking this week with Academy Award-winning actor George Chakiris. He won an Oscar for playing Bernardo in West Side Story. George Chakiris, you've worked in many, many motion pictures, and you worked with some of the great directors. You were in White Christmas, for instance, which was directed by Michael Curtiz.
Well, I'll tell you, the interesting thing about those, for example, on Gentlemen for Blondes, the director was never on the set. It was Jack Cole who was directing that musical sequence. On White Christmas, Michael Curtiz, as far as I know, was never on the set because those musical numbers were directed by Robert Alston, who choreographed them, and created the music, the camera angles and all of that in the rehearsal process. So I never got to, again, I'm not saying he wasn't there, but if he was there, we didn't have to pay attention to him. We had to pay attention to Bob Alton.
That would be like a second unit.
I'm sorry?
That would be like a second unit, I would guess, right? In film parlance.
Well, I'll tell you, no, there was no second unit. It was a first unit, but the director of the film didn't need to be present, really, for musical sequences because they were created by the choreographer. So it was first unit, but with the choreographer in charge.
Now, in West Side Story, there are two credited directors, and you tell the story of what happened there in your book. So it's very interesting. But was that because Jerome Robbins was the dance director and Robert Wise was the dramatic director?
Well, first of all, West Side Story was conceived originally by Jerry Robbins. It came to the theater thanks to him. And of course, the incredible people, Leonard Bernstein, Arthur Lawrence, and Stephen Sondheim, who were on that team originally for the theater production. So I'm assuming, it's an assumption on my part, but I think it makes sense that, of course, when they were doing the movie, that they would need and want Jerry to be present. And thank God that he was, because his presence and what he did for that film were, I think, is what makes the film as exceptional and wonderful as it is. What I remember in just as being one of the guys, one of the actors in the piece, Robert Wise was the experienced filmmaker. So he knew film. I guess it was new. This is all assumption on my part. And so he was the sort of the father figure, I'll say. But Jerry was the one who was on the floor with us during filming. And Robert Wise was more like the father figure in the back, making sure that, I guess, things were going along as he thought they should for with his experience. So to me, in my personal experience, the director for me was really Jerry, because he was the one who was on the floor with us, actually directing us. And Bob was a distant figure, I'll say, just because that was made sense. When Jerry was gone, then Bob was there in a different way.
Now, how do you feel about the fact that if it were today, you would not be cast as Bernardo because you are not, in fact, Puerto Rican?
Well, that makes sense to me. Absolutely. You know, in today's world, with just about everything, we have to think about what's politically correct. I think that makes absolute sense. But I have no problem with that. But it doesn't change the fact of what has preceded us in any film. There's, you know, in the history of movie making, you'd have to spend your life examining everything and talking about casting and how things were done. Anthony Quinn, a Mexican actor, played Zorba the Greek, and who else could have played it? Nobody but him. Would the Greek community have insisted that a Greek actor play it? No. There was a different liberty and view of casting. And now, because of what's going on just in the world and in this country, you know, Black Lives Matter and so much, our attention has been focused on that kind of thing, as it should be. And so that will change the way people address casting as much as they can in today's world. But bottom line, for me, I really think that casting should not have to be politically correct. I think, you know, it's an artistic thing. It's not a political thing. And anybody who's casting anything should, in my opinion, be able to cast the person that they think is most appropriate for that role and not have to be boxed in by, oh, are they Hispanic? Are they Black? Whatever. I think it's an artistic choice. And I think we need to keep that in mind and respect that process, because that's how it all starts.
Did you have a dialogue coach that helped you with your Puerto Rican accent on West Side Story?
No, no. You know, for me, I don't remember how the best accent is no accent. You don't want to draw attention to that. And so subtlety, I think, is key. But I never had anyone helping me with the accent, because I almost didn't have one, you know, as I recall. But again, I wasn't working to have an accent.
Now, you're very tan in the movie. Did they have a dark skin makeup on you, or were you just very tan?
No, well, I'll tell you, you know, I played Rip in the London Company, so I was very pale for that. I'm very pale in life. Well, I look a little dark right here. But yes, the shark guys were not dark. You know, Turner Classic Movies is one of my favorite channels, so we got to see all kinds of movies. I was watching Guns of Navarone not too long ago. Everybody in that movie is dark. That's just the way it was done. It looked correct. But, and Peter Sellers, when he played an East Indian, I mean, he was really dark. But in West Side Story, we were not dark. We were made darker than our own pale complexion, because in the storytelling of West Side Story and other things perhaps like it, in the theater and on film, it's important that an audience to appreciate the storytelling can recognize who's who without being told every time. Right. And that was done in two different ways, as I can think of. Irene Sherriff, costume designer for the West Side Story in the theater and in the film, of course, had different colors for the sharks and for the... That's important in the storytelling, so you can identify characters. And the same, to some degree, or to much lesser degree, this makeup question has surfaced, it seems to me, because of Steven Spielberg's production, and he's made a real issue, and he's right, of casting Puerto Rican characters or Latin characters with Latin actors. I think the makeup question has surfaced because of that, or maybe it would just surface because of what's going on. We've Gone with the Wind and all of these things that everybody is examining and re-examining, and should they be, banished and all that stuff. They shouldn't be banished because we can learn from them. But this is too long an answer. I keep doing it. But again, just for the storytelling, it's important. I mean, film is a visual medium. So we have to help the audience know who the characters are through costume and makeup as much as we can. And it's that simple.
Your costumes are some of the most beautiful and most beautifully colored costumes.
Yeah.
They had a purple kind of look to you that was just amazing.
Yeah. Well, Irene Sherrup, when you look at her body of work, I mean, she did so much, but she was really brilliant with color no matter what she did. But absolutely, Bernardo in the film, there's a sequence or there's part of the film where I'm wearing a purple shirt. And I'm asked about that once in a while. Do you still have that purple shirt? I don't. Again, and Irene Sherrup was able to combine colors that no one would ever think of combining, because people would think, oh, you can't use that color with this color, but you can, because if we just look in nature, we'll see the variety of colors that intermingle in just in a garden. But color was, I think, really, Irene Sherrup always paid serious attention to color, certainly in West Side Story, but I think it's almost everything that she did.
The America number, I think, is one of the most colorful musical numbers ever filmed.
Yeah, well, in the theater version, the America number is done just by the girls, and Chita Rivera, who was the original Anita, when I did it with her in London. Oh, yeah. I mean, and when you have Chita Rivera on this, you don't need anybody else. but in the film version, it was a wonderful idea, because it really, really worked to include the guys in the America number. So it became this playful back and forth between the guys and the girls. And that's what makes it playful and fun and still address issues at the same time. We had such a great time shooting that number. We've worked hard, of course, but we had fun. We played jokes on each other, and so the spirit of what we see on the screen, I think, is helped by the way we all actually felt while we were doing it.
I would think that the opening sequence where you guys are running around the streets of West, in that area that doesn't even exist anymore, that must have been the most difficult thing to shoot.
Well, thinking back, I never thought, and even working on it, I never thought of it as difficult in any way other than pleasing Jerry Robbins. That was my main concern. Bottom line, I think if we pleased Jerry, it must have been okay, because he was such a perfectionist himself, and with himself first. I've heard question and answers about what was it like dancing on pavement, hard surfaces, and so on. But I don't remember ever having a problem with that myself. It was just we had rehearsed so much before we ever got to New York to on location, so we were ready for anything, pretty much, you know.
And you at the moment that you were cast as Bernardo in the film, you were playing Riff on stage in London.
Yeah. When I first auditioned for West Side Story, I remember it was 1958, auditioned for Jerry. And I was originally asked to look at the role of Bernardo. So when I met Jerry, I read that part of the script. And after I did that, he then asked me to look at the role of Riff. So I looked at the role, and I read Rip for him as well. And then eventually I was cast as Rip for the London company. I remember it was on my birthday, September 16, 1958. I got a call from Ruth Mitchell, who was the stage manager for West Side Story, telling me that I had the role of Rip in the London company. And I had 7 checks for my California unemployment. So that was a really great birthday. But I loved playing Rip as well. I mean, it's really interesting because in the theater version, Cool is sung by Rip. In the film version, it's sung by a character called Ice, played so incredibly by Tucker Smith. He is fantastic in Cool. Right. He's just fantastic. But so in the theater version, because Riff sings Cool, there's a little bit more meat on the bone, so to speak, for that role in the theater. And in the film version, because the guys are in the America number, that gives us a little more sort of quote unquote meat on the bones for those roles. So I kind of had the best of both worlds, being able to play Riff in the theater and Bernardo in the film. I loved both of them more than I can say.
There were so many great dancers and actors, and it's kind of unusual to have such great actor dancers all gathered together. David Winters, what a fabulous dancer.
David.
And I know he taught dance as well.
I'm sorry?
I believe he taught dance as well.
Yeah. Oh, say that again.
I believe he was a dance teacher as well as a.
I don't know if he was a dance teacher. I don't know that about David, but I know that David was a choreographer and director. And I think he went on after West Side Story and did a lot of. He did things with Anne Margaret, I think, in Vegas and on film as well. So David had a really interesting career. And Tony Modente, who was one of the Jets, also was a television director as well after West Side Story.
I'm Gary Shapiro. You're listening to From the Bookshelf on KSCO. And we're talking this week with Academy Award-winning actor George Chakiris. He won an Oscar for playing Bernardo in West Side Story. George Chakiris, you appeared in so many television series over the years.
I just saw you recently in a Hawaii Five-O where you were the bad guy.
You're always the bad guy. I especially liked that show, by the way. It was a beautifully run show. Jack Lord he really cared very much about that show and the way everything was done. He was really wonderful to work with. And I remember liking that script. I can't remember specifically why now, but I remember liking that script because it evolved in a way that made sense for the character I was playing. I think I've seen that maybe just once over the years, but I'm not uncomfortable when I look at it because it's kind of okay, you know. But so, you know, the great thing about television is you got to do things that weren't all that terrific all the time, but you also got to do things that were terrific and kept you. One of the reasons I think we all fell in line for television was because it was what was happening. And in order to be visible, you had to be on television as well. So it made sense, you know, professionally and artistically and all of that to do television. And it was, a lot of it was really good.
Well, the era of the musical kind of was ending, right, when you made West Side Story. So there weren't that many opportunities to repeat that kind of performance. So I guess television.
Yeah. I remember, let's see, probably in the mid-50s, give or take, movie musicals were not. Maybe the last White Christmas and Gentlemen Prefer Blondes might have been almost two of the last time, something like that. But because of movie musicals not continuing to go on, work for dancers in Los Angeles was drying up. So, and there wasn't that much television at that time. So then, and so that was my reason for going to New York in 1958 to begin with, because there wasn't as much work as we all needed and wanted to do. So it made sense to move on.
Well, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is your recording career. Now, I happen to have here, my radio audience can't see, but you can, that I have a couple of your albums, and I've had these years. I love these records. George Chakaris was a recording star. You made, I don't know, like 6 or 8 albums. Am I right?
I made 4 at Capitol. And that Gershwin album is I actually made when I was doing Riff in London. That was made in London, that one, with a small record label in London. But it was Gershwin. And we had beautifully produced. So I love that album because you can't go too far wrong with Gershwin. And recording was, wow. Now, those photographs were taken from a little bit after we actually did the album in London.
Yeah, because you're holding your Oscar here.
Yeah, well, that was okay. So that would have been 1962. That Gershwin album that I made in London when I was working on West Side Story there was probably made in 1959, I'm guessing, but I think that's close. But I really loved recording and singing, really loved it. And looking back on the different albums, I think those albums are kind of nice, but I especially like the Gershwin album because, it's Gershwin, yeah.
Well, there's a lovely company out of England called Sepia, and they have released a lovely CD of...
Okay.
And this has got 20 tracks, including your Gershwin songs on here.
Okay, well, maybe I should check that out. Yeah, I should probably get one myself.
They didn't ask you.
Well, that picture on the cover was taken at Capitol for the first Capitol album. So somehow it's on. But I'm seeing things that I didn't know about now, and I have to check it out.
Sepia Records, they're a lovely label. They put out a lot of great stuff, including this George Chakaris Sings.
Okay, thanks. I had no idea.
I've had your albums, since they came out.
Okay.
Now, my sister especially liked to put your pictures up on her wall. You were in a lot of teen magazines at that time.
The magazines at that time, I don't think anybody was ever interviewed for anything. They just did their articles the way they wanted to do them, Troy Donahue with someone else and, that romantic stuff. But some of it's kind of funny. It's charming because it's I don't think anything is based on fact, but nobody minded. That's just the way things were, everybody accepted it pretty much as normal.
Well, tell us a little bit about Natalie Wood. I mean, she's so beloved and what a wonderful actress she was, and she plays your sister in West Side Story. You must have gotten to know her. How was she?
Oh, she was wonderful. First of all, she was only 23 when we made West Side Story, but she was a bona fide movie star at 23, and she had been in movies since she was a kid. So she really was. And when you see Natalie in the middle of one of those movies where she was just a child, you see as a child how gifted and how talented she is.
Right.
Miracle. You can see that. Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen so many productions of theater productions of West Side Story over the years, and I've gotten to see a lot of wonderful girls play Maria and girls who sang and all of that. But for me, Natalie is still, she's the one. She just quite simply is the one. She had a personal quality that I think she brought, of course, to everything she ever did. And that enhanced everything she did. She was beautiful. She was intelligent. She was professional. Every good adjective that you can think of applies to Natalie. And she was, I've heard over the years that she was standoffish and that kind of thing. That was never my experience or view of her ever. No, she was gregarious, quite easy to talk to. And, there's this story about Natalie having had a list of people she liked and didn't like or something like that in her dream. I never saw that list, so I never paid any attention to anything like that. And I sometimes wonder if that list ever really occurred or really happened. But it did, it was probably just fun. It was just a joke. But again, she herself, Natalie, was just a glorious, lovely person.
Now, George Karras, in your book, My West Side Story, a memoir, there's a lot of stuff that you don't mention. Did you specifically say, well, this is just going to be a professional memoir rather than a memoir of your personal life?
Well, you know, I just that's really what came to mind, and that's what I cared about. So that's what I, and looking at my appointments and all, because that's what came to mind, and I think that's what matters to me. You know, now and again, if I read a biography by someone, and they get personal, I sometimes wonder why are you bothering to tell me that? Do I really need to know that? You know, and also, you know, I one of the things that just by nature, I've always had and I still have I respect people's lives and who they are. Even now, even with people who are close friends, I don't ask questions unless they bring it up first. But I don't pry. I think it's fair enough for people to be interested. I don't like people being curious just for the sake of curiosity. I just don't like that in general about reporting across the board, no matter who they're talking. If it's a political figure or an entertainment figure, whoever it is, I just think we know too much about every now. Nobody has any. There's no privacy left. It's all out there, and I personally don't like it. So I just by nature and by instinct that just wasn't where I went because I really didn't think of it.
So I guess those teen magazines were on the right track when they just made all that stuff up rather than bother you with it.
No, I don't think I was ever interviewed by a teen magazine ever. No, that stuff was just fabricated. All of it. I would say, certainly with me, it was. Yeah.
Well, also, you have a website and you have some things for sale and stuff on your website. You want to tell us a little bit about your website?
Yeah, well, let's see. I have a jewelry collection, sterling silver jewelry that I sell on my website. The jewelry thing, I love doing it. It started as a hobby. I've lost track of time, maybe 15 or 20 years ago. And then it became more than a hobby, just happenstance. I became very familiar with the jewelry district downtown and the process of just learning things, how to work with metal and solder and technical things. There was a manufacturer that I still work with downtown. And there was a Japanese distributor some while ago knew that manufacturer as well and saw some of my stuff. And he approached me and asked me if he could distribute my pieces in Japan. And I said, yes, of course, you know. So the two ways that I sell today in this country and really in every place in the world would be on my website. But in Japan, my Japanese distributor has me with a Japanese department store called Mitsukoshi. So I think now and again, we sell in that department store in Tokyo. The jewelry thing, started as a hobby. It's not a big business now, but it became more than a hobby just with time because there was so much and so much fun to do. One of the great things I love about jewelry making is because when you fit design and you ultimately make a piece of jewelry, you can hold it in your hand, and there's something very gratifying about that. Yeah.
Well, there's some beautiful pieces, and people can visit georgesicaris.com and check it out. The book is called My West Side Story, a memoir, and it is written by the Oscar-winning George Chakiris. And what a pleasure it's been for me to chat with you. Thank you so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Hey, thank you. Thanks.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you subscribe to podcasts, and you can like us on Facebook. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas and Ollie Jackson. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.